This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, PSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Lawmakers in Springfield have yet to address the massive funding shortfall for the region's public transportation agencies. While Springfield looks for solutions, Metra CEO Jim Derwinski is drawing up two budgets, including one that outlines substantial service cuts. I'm WBBM Noon Business Hour host Rob Hart, and we talk about the present and future of Metra on this weekend's edition of At Issue. Metra CEO Jim Derwinski, thank you for returning to At Issue. We last talked about the state of Metra several years ago on this program, and things have changed considerably, not only for Metra, but for public transit in general in the Chicago area since then. So let's talk about the two major setbacks for Metra and the RTA in Springfield, starting with the transit reform bill that went down to defeat, and then lawmakers passed a budget without addressing the $770 million fiscal cliff. What does this mean for Metra?
Well, the statute is very clear on the budget process, and that's really the biggest challenge in front of us right now. If we don't have known sources of revenue, we actually have to build budgets that have a budgetary hole in it. In other words, we have to have reduction of expense. And so that process is underway. The RTA has instructed all the service boards to build scenario one and scenario two. You know, one being, yeah, we're funded, and another one being, yep, we're going to have to fill that hole. And the 771 number is the number we've been publicizing for, you know, a long time. But that has to go back to the 2023 tax numbers. And so, thankfully, people like yourself are doing great on Amazon here in the region, and the taxes are coming in better. And because of that, that number is going to be revised probably very shortly here. I anticipate at the RTA board meeting this month, we'll get some revised marks, and hopefully that number shrinks. Therefore, the amount of effect would be less. But one key point in all this, and that's just 2026. The real hole is 2027. 2027 is when there's no federal relief money that's supplementing a portion of the revenues for the year. So solutions have to be put in place rather quickly. And that's because it takes such a long time. Once they, if it's a fee, it's a tax, it's a whatever, that's going to become the revenue source. It takes a long time for that to move through government and eventually get into the cash flow.
And what was the status of the funding and reform bill before it fell apart in June? Were there a number of sticking points that needed to be addressed before the end of the year? Or was it just one or two things that could be ironed out and result in a bill that would be passed in Springfield later this year?
You know, I would say from an operator's perspective, we are pretty much agnostic on what the bill was going to be. What really this came down to, especially in the crunch time of the last week of May, it came down to differences of opinion and what I understand from how the House feels it should be funded and how the Senate felt it should be funded. Obviously, the Senate in the last hour of the last day actually passed a bill with a funding solution behind it. The House didn't take that up, and that really goes to show you that whatever they were discussing previous, it was already kind of written in stone that it wasn't going to move through that particular day.
Now, there were two budgets, or everyone has prepared two budgets, one that includes the fix and one that includes the fiscal cliff. And we've already seen what the CTA has planned as far as service reductions are concerned. What would happen to Metra service, and what could Metra passengers expect if the drastic service cuts budget goes into effect?
So if it fully goes into effect, I've often said, not to refer to it as a cliff, you would do this in any business, you do a phased approach, or I like to call it a stair-step approach to your final solution. So, and again, in 27, when there's no money left, you'd have to build budgets in 26 that would have phased approaches into what eventually becomes the full whole. What does that look like? Well, it probably starts with the later night services and some of the earlier morning services. It then moves into the midday services, which has really been our best ridership gains. So the discretionary rider through the midday portion since the pandemic has been our biggest gain. So it'll hurt in a lot of different ways. Weekend services would most likely get affected somewhere in one of those two phases. And then eventually the big numbers are going to come when you have to start hitting revenue trains through the peak periods. And the peak periods have widened. You know, where it used to just be like a 6:30 to 9, it's now like 6:30 to 10:30. And then it opens up in the back end a lot wider. So the choices for people are going to go down. We can always add a few more cars on certain trains if we can park them in the yard. So sometimes the overcrowding won't be an initial issue, but depending on people's patterns, it's gonna dramatically change how they would utilize the system. And one of the things that's very important, I think, to note is like we haven't plateaued in ridership gain yet, but we also haven't stabilized in a ridership pattern yet. Arbitrarily, you can just have a Tuesday that we hit a peak that we haven't seen since 2019. But Wednesday, they're not here. So what that means for the rider, it's going to mean a lot of inconsistency, especially if we have to get into the phase where we start hitting those more rush hour trains.
Now, let's go back to 2020 and the origin of the COVID relief funding that kept not only the public transit services in Chicago afloat, but across the entire country. The stay-at-home orders begin starting in early March of 2020. And then a week later, you're still running the regular service schedule. And my memory of that time is watching empty Union Pacific Northwest Line express trains zipping through Park Ridge with a handful of riders because everybody was at home. How has ridership recovered since then? You talk about it hasn't plateaued yet, but it's still running, what, 50, 60% of 2019?
So if you blend it all together, it's about 70, 71% right now. And the interesting thing is Mondays and Fridays are still lagging. There are days on different lines, like one line, Union Pacific North Line, might hit 97% today. And for no apparent real reason, another line might hit only 51%. So as you blend all that together, you know, the higher number ridership lines are going to kind of bring those averages up. But yeah, we're right around 70% right now. Weekends, we're typically hitting over 100. So people, we've added more trains and people are utilizing the service because it's not 2 hour gaps. You know, in the beginning of 2020, when you talk about those trains going down the line, Metra was one of the only agencies that actually severed service. We cut service in half to reduce expense when we did have, you know, all the uncertainty of the beginning of 2020. And it wasn't until the beginning of almost 21 we started putting service back. Where we've been able to do what we call a regional rail approach, more deliberate service throughout the course of the day, little extended period on the shoulders, we're actually seeing the highest ridership gains. Where people are saying, I'd like to get home to my kid's baseball game, that doctor appointment, or whatever, not waiting for that rush hour train seems to be what people have really responded to. And on the lines when we've been able to do that, the biggest gains have occurred.
You talk about service cuts, and that is a way to... You're speaking to the public, but you're also speaking to lawmakers, too, to give them a sense of urgency about what the stakes are about transit funding. But is it also an opportunity to rebuild the Metra schedule to reflect the fact that ridership is now 71% of where it was in 2019 and that patterns have changed dramatically? This is not, I mean, Metra and its predecessor railroads built their commuter service around the idea of Mr. or Mrs. Suburbia leaving their home at 8 o'clock, catching the train at 9, and then coming home at 5 o'clock. And now you have more people taking the trains on weekends and during the middle of the day. And could you build a reduced service that reflects those usage patterns?
You know, there's a big challenge in all this, and I think the answer is it's going to come down to the devil in the detail. So, like, I think it was yesterday, Route 59, one of our busiest stations, 3,500 passengers were recorded there. Tomorrow, it could be 2,100. So when you swing numbers like that, it becomes very much impossible to predict the reduction of service. So we've got the opportunity on the railroads, obviously, to add more seats. We can add a car or two. Yards have to be able to accommodate those cars. But the real question is, once you start eliminating those trains, where are the people going to go? And the other big challenge with Metra is because we don't have the train doesn't just make one trip from Aurora in or Harvard in, it goes back out. And a lot of times when it goes back out, it's barely full. But it has to go back out to make the 9 o'clock train. If it came in at 5, it might have to go back out to make the 9 o'clock train. So just the fact that you're not able to remove that middle train that doesn't have that many people on it, that's really pulling your numbers down, doesn't alleviate the fact that I need another set of equipment out at Harvard, say at 9 o'clock, to bring in that next crowd, which could be anywhere from 300 to 600 people.
Now, speaking as a Metra passenger myself, I've noticed that my monthly pass from the former Zone C has gone from $130 to the $100 unlimited ride super saver, and now it's $75 zone 2 into downtown Chicago. If you have to make ends meet, and if you have to stave off some of those service cuts that would be under consideration under that fiscal cliff budget, would a fare increase be in the cards?
Fare increase is definitely in the cards. RTA has basically instructed us to look at everything from 10 to a 20% increase, what that would look like. And, you know, speaking of your pass, when we rezoned, that's one of the things, obviously, we did during the coming out of the pandemic. When we rezoned, we looked at all the riders we had gained because they were, like, all of a sudden riding the system because of the unlimited pass, and looked at the price point of what would keep them on the system. Because remember, there was a $60 pass that actually was closer zones in for a while. So this was the compromise of the way the board looked at it to make sure we're retaining the riders we already gained and not push them away. However, you know, as you point out, being a longtime rider, the prices are down, the discount's down on the monthly. The one-way ticket, though, has not changed in price since 2018.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart. We're talking with Metra CEO Jim Derwinski about the present and future of Metra and some hard choices to make. Let's talk about usage patterns once again, because it's been a slow, steady climb as people return to the office in downtown Chicago. Remote work is here to stay. How much has the Kennedy Expressway construction project impacted ridership, not only on the Union Pacific lines, but on the Milwaukee District North?
Yeah, absolutely. The three lines, the Milwaukee North, the Union Pacific North, and the Northwest line, all are impacted by that construction. It's just a bottleneck coming in and going out. And we saw last year, when the construction started, we saw an increase in ridership, specifically on those three lines, that kind of maintained itself, kind of then dwindled off a little bit during the winter time. There's various different reasons we usually see dwindling of ridership, but it popped right back up as soon as that Kennedy construction kicked into gear this spring. So it's absolutely driving people. And I believe, you know, our experience, the on-time performance, the less stress, the ability to be in one of the safest modes of transportation around, people will eventually say, this is a better option.
And then with this funding crunch, is that going to impact capital plans at all? Because I have noticed you have new locomotives on the Milwaukee District lines. There are plans to replace some of the 1950s and 1960s vintage coaches on the Burlington Northern Santa Fe, cars that were bought by the CB&Q way back when. And you have this plan to put self-propelled rail cars on the Rock Island. Will this funding crunch impact those efforts?
No. So the operating budget and the capital budget are totally separate. And, you know, the investment that the state of Illinois made and the federal government made into our capital programs over the last 5 years will continue on. These are long-term projects. We're about to replace 22 bridges on the UP North Line, multi-$100 million project. Got the rail cars coming, as you mentioned, locomotives. All of those projects are in full swing. They absolutely need to be done. People shouldn't have to be in 1950s cars unless they choose to. They shouldn't have to be going on 1898 bridges unless they want to. We've got an obligation to actually rebuild the railroad and make it for the future. How many trains run on that railroad? That's a different question.
Now, the rail car program on the Rock Island District, this is very interesting because you're going away from a tried and true approach that's been used on Metra and its predecessor railroads since the 1950s, the push-pull locomotive operation, and now you're going to introduce self-propelled rail cars that'll go on the suburban line of the Rock Island that goes to the Beverly neighborhood. There are stops every four blocks. It really is more of a rapid transit type of operation as opposed to heavy commuter rail. That could really change things operationally in terms of how often you run trains and how often people can use them.
Yeah, so the interesting thing about these vehicles that are being made by Stadler USA out in Salt Lake City, they don't have the capacity of a push-pull train set. What they do have is they're going to be 100% emissions free. So they're battery powered. They're going to be the first in the country. They actually are going to be designed to work on the National Railway Network, all the crashworthiness standards that are required. And so the pilot program just on the Beverly branch of the Rock Island, it's perfect for midday service. Why drag a big diesel around, lumbering noise and all that kind of stuff when you can actually have a silent, operating, efficient vehicle on battery power? My hope is, of course, down the road that some of the other sublines start adapting this equipment. We'll have to see how well it works in the heat and the cold of Chicago. We'll have to see what the distance that the batteries can go between.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Charges, but you got the Fox Lake sub, you've got all the way up to Kenosha, and someday, yes, O'Hare service.
Let's talk about the O'Hare service, because there was a little bit of a pilot program during the Democratic National Convention last summer where you ran an hourly service to O'Hare during the convention. How did that work, with a year to kind of digest all the data?
Yeah, so the interesting thing was the convention itself, for its own reasons, decided they really wanted to bust the delegates coming in and out. The people that benefited from it were the Chicago residents, people that actually paid attention and said, I can go to O'Hare now. It's every hour. We saw those people on the trains. We interviewed those people on the trains. We asked them, would they want more of that service? And the answer is yes, yes, and yes. At that point in time, the price point was down like a Zone 2 ticket versus premium service, which it could be down the road if it was, say, a nonstop service from O'Hare directly into the Central Business District. So absolutely can be done, but we have to protect interstate commerce as well on the rails that we own and the rails we don't own. So there's going to take some serious infrastructure to get that done. We're doing studies right now. We're trying to get some delegates behind us to try to find us some of that real big funding type of monies so that we could actually go ahead and put in the infrastructure needed. It's going to need its own lane, and it's going to need at least two, if not three, flyovers so that, again, the freight trains, the passenger trains, and then these more frequent trains, ideally 20 or 15 minutes apart, would be able to service O'Hare.
That takes us back to the beginning of our conversation about the RTA reform measure that was attached to the funding measure that didn't make it to the finish line in Springfield, and that is doing away with the RTA and then replacing it with a new service board that would allow for more integration between the CTA, Metra, and Pace. If you wanted to implement service like an O'Hare service, or let's say a Metra Electric service that could supplant a Red Line extension, could you do that today? Could you coordinate that today? And how would a different service board system allow for greater coordination between the CTA and Metra?
I think the one thing that the pandemic has taught all of us as operators, when you're not facing a financial cliff every single year, we had a budget hole every single year. And this has been going on for years. The work from home thing started many years ago, and it's been showing up as a Friday if you look at the pre-2020 numbers. So we're all seeing a decline in ridership, decline in revenues. We've been dealing with this every single year. You fill it in with this relief money from the federal government, all of a sudden, all the agencies are working together like we've never worked together before. As we've said time and time again, this is not a governance issue. This has always been a funding issue. And if you're having to fight for every single dollar, of course, you're going to protect where you're making the most money. I see what the legislator wants to do. I sat in all of those hearings. I answered their questions for hours on end. And at the end of the day, I still think a real conversation needs to be around about what the region wants. Again, you brought up Red Line Extension. I think it's a great project. It's very expensive. Bring up O'Hare, an enhanced service to O'Hare. It's going to be very expensive. The region is going to have to make decisions. The current RTA board is in a position today. They control our budgets. They're in a position today to make those decisions.
Why are transit projects so expensive? Because when you look at the Red Line Extension project and it's $5 billion a mile, billion with a B, to go from 95th Street to 130th Street, from an engineering perspective, from a construction perspective, what are the things that you find that drive up the price tag of a big infrastructure project?
So Metra hasn't done a tremendous amount of big infrastructure projects, and I really can't answer on Red Line Extension. I'm not an expert on the price escalation that's occurred there. I can say, like with a lot of our station projects, it's the governmental red tape. It's the time it takes to get things done, the permitting, the processing, the double checks, the triple checks because of where the money's coming from. And I think a lot of that can add to some of the risk factors that get baked into the prices that the construction and the design contractors produce.
Outside of weekend ridership and midday ridership, where are the growth opportunities for Metra? Is it developing that midday ridership and cultivating that weekend ridership? Or are there certain areas or certain regions of the Metra service area that are growing faster than others and are opportunities to mint new Metra passengers?
Yeah, the areas that have the more robust service, they're growing the fastest and they have the best opportunity. Reverse commute is a big thing. So there's people that like to live in the city, but they have to work in the suburbs. It's that last mile connection. If figuring out those last mile connections, or as a lot of people do now, they're building things near Metra stations, or they're building, you know, housing or businesses there. It's that reverse commute. There's the market. If you're only running a reverse commute train every 2 hours up until it's time for rush hour, that's really not an option for people. But if you get that frequency of service up there and on the lines where the infrastructure's there, we're starting to see that growth. On the UP North Line is a great example. We're seeing as many riders going north out of Ravenswood as we are seeing coming in from Ravenswood. Clybourne's another interesting area because you can pick up Northwest Line riders and go north. You got to switch seats, but at the end of the day, it is an opportunity for growth, and it's the frequency of service that drives the growth. Our three lines that don't have a lot of frequency of service, Heritage Quarter, North Central Service, Southwest Service, they're going to be the ones that continue to struggle. A lot of it has to do with the freight rail network that we have to operate on. We just can't put out trains as frequent as we want.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart talking with Metra CEO Jim Derwinski. Let's talk about the freight railroads. I mean, you have the big announcement this week, the proposed merger between the Union Pacific and the Norfolk Southern. That impacts four Metra lines. What is this going to mean for Metra if this merger gets the blessing from the federal government?
Well, I think it's an opportunity again for discussion, just like what happened when CP and KCS merged. So Metra did oppose that merger. We felt that the patterns that were seen from natural growth from the combined two companies into this bigger company were going to dramatically impact our ability to grow on our service lines that we own in the future. There's some evidence that that's starting they're starting to see business models where more trains are being run, longer trains are being run. So I think it's going to take us to do a lot of analytics. The interesting thing about the UP North Line, there's almost no freight. The UP Northwest Line, I think it's six a day right now, so it's almost no freight in relative terms. It's the UP West Line. That is their bread and butter coming into the region. it connects very easily down to the Norfolk Southern Yard at 47th Street and 63rd Street. And so the interesting thing will be how they plan to actually merge these two operations together. There's Global 4 down in Joliet. Again, it's another opportunity for them to actually quit bringing freight trains down in the city center and actually kind of bypass the region. Still get into the connectivity that Chicago is, but kind of bypass the region. So I think the best way I can answer that question is we'll see, but we are going to be talking with NS and we will be talking with UP about their ideas as we decide whether or not we support or oppose this potential merger.
Now, is Metra still talking to Union Pacific about negotiating the fee for using the tracks on the Union Pacific now that the Union Pacific trains or Union Pacific branded trains are being operated by Metra Cruise?
Yeah, so we brought all the employees over the last year, but as far as the fees for operating on the tracks, right now we're working under what's called a conditions of entry agreement that the Union Pacific basically said, take it or leave it, this is what you have to do. I mean, we'll probably not negotiate that. We'll probably end up arguing that in a format that we'll see whether or not we gain any ground in that. We feel that the fees that they're asking us to pay, which is 100% more than we were paying, are unreasonable.
Why did Union Pacific want to get out of that purchase of service agreement? Because it had been grandfathered over from the Chicago and Northwestern. It had been in place for 50 years, if not longer. It is one of two that is still in place. The BNSF is the other. Why did UP come to you and say, you know, we want to get out of the passenger train service for game for good?
Their direct answer was, we want to concentrate on our core business, which is moving America's goods. They said, we see nobody better operating commuter trains in the country than you at Metra here. We think you guys should operate that system. And I think at the end of the day, it still boils down to just a business model. It's still generating some revenue for them. Anytime we operate our train on their track, they're generating some revenue. It reduces some liability, and it certainly changes the operating ratio, and Wall Street does watch that.
And then that also leads to what could be another massive change for Metra riders who are very habit driven, is that we could be rebranding the Metra lines before too long. There was a survey of customers to see what they thought about that, because I still call it the Rock Island. The Rock Island's been gone since 1980. You know, the Milwaukee District lines are named after the Milwaukee Road, which has been gone since 1985. So these very old names still persist because they're attached to Metra lines that are used by hundreds of thousands of people per day. So do you think the ridership would accept change if the names are changed?
So changing the railroad is hard, right? It moved, the wheels move very slow. When we started changing the seats over, 50% of people loved the new seats, 50% of people didn't like the new seats. It seems that people are very habitual about that. So again, with the name change, we did go out, we surveyed, we explained the rationale behind it. Our board's basically considering it right now. At the end of the day, there'd probably be a chunk of people that say, nope, I'm still going to call it the Rock Island Line, just as much as I call it Sears Tower still. But at the end, you know, it makes more sense for, if you go internationally, almost anywhere, the line naming that we're talking about doing, it just makes more sense for the visitor. Because we got two, like you just pointed out, Milwaukee North and Milwaukee West that don't go to Milwaukee. We have a Rock Island train that doesn't go to Rock Island. We've got a Metra Electric train, and it's the only one named after its mode of propulsion. So the naming that they've proposed and they've sent to the public and talked about, it did have a very positive feedback, but again, not 100% feedback. You'd still have some legacy. So I think the compromise and all that is going to be still hanging out of those heritage colors and some of the language on the line. It could be called, you remember before it was called the UP Northwest Line, it was the Chicago Northwestern.
Yes.
So, you know, even all the Chicago Northwestern riders got over that over a period of time. So it'll change will happen, but it'll probably be over a couple year period.
Well, is it going to be a color system? Is it numbers, generic descriptions of where it goes? What's the plan?
The latest thing that was presented to the public and our board's considering, it's a north, a south, and a west. So it's directionals, then numbers, and then colors. So like, let's just say all the north lines might be yellow. They would have an N, they would have a number behind them, and they would all go to, say, Ogilvy. for an example. So it'd be similar. So people from a legacy perspective and a new rider perspective would have ways to figure out, how does this work? Am I looking for the yellow one, the blue one, the green one? Am I looking for the north one, the south one? Am I looking for one, 1A, or two? So there's a whole system that they've really brought what I'll call world-class best practices from transit agencies all over. And that's kind of the way they built that recommendation and they sent the surveys out.
Well, 30 years ago, the CTA rebranded the all their rapid transit, you know, rail lines as colors. And people talk about the red line today and the blue line today. And very few people talk about the... They don't call it the Howard Englewood Jackson Park line. They don't call it O'Hare Congress Douglas. It's the blue line. And I think if once people get used to it, it sticks.
I do. I totally believe it to be true. I also think the way you roll it out, you know, not it'll be the whole system. If it's done, it'll be done in such a way that you can visually look at it. And it'll make sense. You know, again, so when we did surveys coming out of the pandemic of asking people why you ride, how often you ride, one of the biggest eye-openers we ever saw in one of these listening sessions was talking to, say, a BNSF rider that had no idea that Metra actually went to Harvard or Metra actually went to Lake Forest. They just thought, well, Metra was the train I take in the Union Station. And when they saw the big map and said, there's that many Metra lines? That was a big eye-opener for us. And so I think in a lot of ways, this is another part of the opportunity as we reinvent. You know, right now, our surveys indicate 28% of our riders are with us less than 1 year. So if you think about that, that's a lot of new people to the system. So the people that have been around for the 30 years, they're going to eventually retire, move on, and we're going to get a lot more of these people that have only been here 1 year, and for them, it'll be just the way it was.
Metra CEO Jim Derwinski, thank you for joining us on this weekend's edition of At Issue. If you'd like to hear the program again, you can find it at WBBMNewsRadio.com, the Odyssey app, and now the iHeartRadio app. Until next weekend's edition of At Issue, I'm Rob Hart. News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.